We have to wait until everybody always comes out. Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming out. I know that we're all very excited. We have the great honor this evening of having Rabbi Marburger. Rabbi Marburger is not only a member of the court, of Meisharim Court in Lakewood, but he also authored a book called Business Halacha, published by Art Scroll, and is one of the leading authorities in the country on Heter Iska. Now, in Marlboro, we appreciate anyone who is an authority on any type of heter. but particularly, heter iska is what allows businesses to function within Torah law, with the restrictions that the Torah puts on business functions. So it's something that the businesses call from all over to get Rabbi Marburger's opinion to make sure that their contracts are proper. So it's a big honor for us. But before we hear from Rabbi Marburger, we also have the honor tonight of hearing from our very own Mike Abramel.
Okay. Wrote some stuff down. Okay, most of you know me. The rabbis are all drunk. Wait a minute, that's from Purim. I've been a remodeling contractor for, and a contractor is a bad word because I actually do the work myself. I don't really contract any work out. So I'm a home remodeler over 28 years. I've broken up fist fights between husbands and wives. I've disciplined children, and I've seen some very strange things hanging from bedroom ceilings. But more important is an interesting topic because I always was wondering what my obligation was in terms of responsibility and what things go wrong. And I mean, they often go wrong. I mean, not so much for me, but they do go wrong occasionally. The job I'm on right now is a kitchen, and the previous owners had done some remodeling in the basement. So the house itself is a standard model house. I was very familiar with it. But the previous owner had done a lot of renovation in the basement, and they had physically moved the chimney and the water lines into a pantry in the kitchen that nobody knew about. So we start taking the cabinets out, and now I'm looking at this chimney in the middle of the room that, what am I going to do with this now? So the homeowner is like, he was all good about it, but he could have said, listen, you were contracted to do this kitchen. You've got to do whatever's involved to do the kitchen. Now it's another day's work for me. There's a lot of material involved. Who's responsible? What do I do to him? How do I charge him? Do I charge him the same rate? I'm already there, et cetera, et cetera. How does this work? What do I do? So another one is there are occasions when you'll hire somebody and you feel that there's a meeting of the minds and you discuss the scope of the job and the colors and the variable ideas that you're going to have. But when the job's finished, not quite what you thought it was going to be, or the grout's a little darker than you thought, or the decor isn't really matching to your house, or the paint color isn't quite right. What happens now when the guy wants to do it over? Who pays? What do you do? Who's responsible? How much do you charge? How does it work? Also, for me, you see a lot of shows, I watch a lot of shows, that show people what to do when a contractor messes up, when he doesn't show up, when he's not doing the job right, when the craftsmanship isn't done well. And that's all fine. But what happens when the customer is a nut and you can never satisfy them, and no matter what you do, it's not good and they're not going to pay you? Then what do you do? So hopefully all these questions will be answered, and I'll now turn it over to Rabbi Marburger.
No, that was all.
I'm under strict instructions from Mike to leave all the jokes for him. So you're going to have to hear a very serious lecture. To begin with, to introduce the topic, the question that we're going to deal with this evening is basically, how do we deal with a contractor, other than Mike, a worker that does something where he's not performing the contract that he was hired to do? There are different cases. You can hire someone, you can give him a deadline. You're making your child's getting married in a couple of months. You have your family coming from around the world to visit you, and you want to make sure that when they come, your house is in perfect condition. You hire a painter, you hire a contractor to fix up the house, make sure everything looks good. You explain to him that you had a tight deadline, you're doing this only because you're hosting this your family, you want to make sure everything looks right. The contractor promises, no problem, it'll be ready in 6 weeks, and 6 months later, the wedding, your children are married, living happily ever after, and your house is not finished yet. On one hand, he's done work. He's entitled to pay. On the other hand, he hasn't fulfilled his promise. He hasn't fulfilled the contract. These aren't the terms that he's agreed to do. And the question is, how do you deal with it? Another extreme case is, what happens if someone does work that he's simply not hired to do? You come home one day after a long day's work, and you see a bunch of workers putting the finishing touch on a new 15-foot deck. What's going on? It turns out you live on 16 Kilmore, and they thought it was 61. They did something to the wrong house. It can happen. What do you do? Do you have to pay? Do you tell them to get lost? How do we deal with these kinds of situations? Now, before we begin, just want to make a bit of a disclaimer. There's a basic difference in halacha between a question about kashrus, a question about Shabbos, and a question about Mike. If you have a question, is this kosher? So what do? It's your personal question. You call your rabbi, you read him the ingredients, you tell him what the symbol looks like. If he tells you it's kosher, you eat it. If he tells you it's not kosher, you buy something else. You have a question about Shabbos, I could do something, I can't do something, you speak to your rabbi, it's your personal decision. When you're dealing with a financial matter, it's very different. By definition, there's someone else that you're dealing with. You're having a dispute, there's a counterparty, there's someone else. If you're right, he's wrong. If you're wrong, he's right. And in these matters, the halacha is very clear. You don't have the right to say, driving your car, you get into a car accident, you smash up someone's car, you get out of the car, you tell him, you see he's Jewish, you say, oh, I call my rabbi, he says I don't have to pay, goodbye. Doesn't work like that, because it's very nice, you called your rabbi, gave him your side of the story, and he agreed that you're right, but the other person has their side of the story. They have the right to be heard, they have the right to present the case, and therefore, when we're dealing with financial matters, the halacha is only meaningful if both parties had an opportunity to present their side of the story to the same rabbi who heard both sides of the story, were able to get a feel for exactly what happened, and then he can discuss what the halacha is. But if anyone has a personal issue, and they're going to hear the lecture tonight, and I guarantee them they're going to walk out thinking that the rabbi agreed with them. As far as halacha is concerned, it doesn't work like that. And if there is an actual dispute, it's something which your counterparty has the right to be heard, has the right to discuss it together, either at a bezdin or with the rabbi. Let's begin. Normally when you hire a worker, and there's a question of how much to pay him or how to pay him, you look at the contract. Before you hire someone, you negotiate the terms, you define the job, and whatever the parties agree on, that's the agreement, and that's what's binding. What happens if you hire someone and you don't discuss the price? There's one morning you wake up, you see there's a leak in the kitchen. Now you know if you wait till your husband comes home and you tell him about it, he's going to want to fix it himself, and who knows what you're going to end up with. So you call a plumber. Plumber comes down, fixes the leak, and hands you a bill for $500. Now, $500, he was there for a couple of minutes, an hour, a service call. It's a bit extreme. You tell him what's going on. And he tells you, this is my price. So what do? How much do you pay?
Mike? You got to pay the $500 and fight it after.
Shame on you if you didn't negotiate or talk about the price beforehand.
Okay. You are completely right. The Chavetz Chaim, when he makes the point that whenever you hire someone, whenever you hire a contractor or anyone else, let's not just pick on contractors tonight, it's important to negotiate a price in advance. Because he says, first of all, it's good business advice. Before he comes down, you have leverage. He wants the job. He's willing to talk. Once he finishes, the contract is not has no incentive to be reasonable. He's going to ask for topped out. But second of all, the Chafetz Chaim continues, if you don't negotiate a price, what's going to happen? At the end of the job, the worker is going to present you a bill. He's going to try to get as much as he can out of you. The homeowner, the employer, is going to want to pay as little as possible. So you have two choices. Either you pull out your checkbook and you pay him in full, in which case, you're going to get taken for a ride. Or you say, no, I'm not paying you. In that case, you're very likely stealing from him. So in order to avoid these issues, it's important you will avoid a lot of heartache, a lot of headache, a lot of fighting. It's important to negotiate in advance. But what do you do if you don't? What happens? The halacha here is actually pretty clear. That if you hire a worker, and these workers, and there's a range of accepted prices. Some plumbers charge $80, some charge $100, some charge $60. The halacha is that if there's no discussion in advance, you pay him the minimal rate. And the reason for that is that it's understood. If you're hiring a worker, you know, actually by a show of hands, who in this room are employers and who are employees? Employer? Uh-oh. All right, we'll have to switch lectures. There's an assumption. You're an employer. When you're hiring someone, you're going to pay the minimal that you can get away with. He comes in, you're desperate, he asks for top dollar, you may or may not hire him. But the assumption is, unless you negotiate, unless there's something to discuss, the workers realize that the capitalists are going to try to take advantage of them. The employers understand it, and therefore, unless you discuss it in advance, you're going to get the minimal wage. Now again, minimum wage doesn't mean $8 an hour. It depends on the job, it depends on your level of experience. If you go to a neurosurgeon in a Mayo Clinic, then you're going to have to pay the rates that a specialist in a prestigious hospital commands. You can't say, there's an intern that lives down the block from me that'll give me a better deal. You have to compare apples to apples, oranges to oranges. But within the range, if specialists, some charge more, some charge less, you would only have to pay the minimal amount. Now that's a case where there are no negotiations. You hire the person, there's no discussion, they come in, they do the work, they present you with a bill. The case that we're going to focus on tonight are a bit different. You hire someone, you negotiate a price, you define the job. The contractor doesn't deliver what he promises. How do we deal with that situation? Now, if you think about it, you hired him, you said, I'm going to pay you this amount, I'll pay you $10,000 to do this job. If he doesn't do that job, then the agreement, the contract, is void, it's meaningless. He hasn't performed what you've hired him to do. So you end up with a situation which is the equivalent of hiring someone without speaking anything out. There's no agreement. There may have been a signed contract, but if he didn't perform his part of the deal, you're obviously going to have to do your part of the deal. And therefore, we end up with a situation where, although you may have negotiated, you end up with a situation where there's no binding agreement at the end of the day. Now, in these situations, the Gemara makes a very interesting distinction. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Beis, brings down two statements that seem to be a flat-out contradiction. You go into someone's field, we're talking about farmers, you walk into his farm, and you plant a bunch of trees. He never hired you to do it on your own. You were bored one day. You're a member of the green movement. You just took a couple of trees and went and you planted them.
Who owns the property?
Hmm?
Who owns the property?
You do. I come in, I plant the trees. So again, I've done work I wasn't hired to do. I'm a Rav, Shamin Loi, V'yada Atachtaina. I deserve to get paid. I provided a service. I planted your field for you. But, yadai alach tachtayim. What does that mean? We'll get to the details of what that means a bit later, but it means I don't get my full salary. I get just a minimal amount. That's the first statement. The Gemara continues. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, Ayin din kama odam roitza litin besada zulin tzua. We figure out how much it would cost, how much person would pay to hire someone to plant this tree, this field. Which means you have to pay the full going rate for the service. So we got a contradiction. Rav says, if I do work without being hired, I get paid the minimal amount. Shmuel says, I pay the going rate for the service provided. So how do we resolve these two statements? So the Gemara says a very important distinction. Amar of Papa Vulei Pligi. They're not arguing. These two statements are completely consistent. They're talking about different cases. Kan besada hasuyulita, kan besada shena suyulita. It depends what kind of field you planted. If there's a farm, every year the farmer plants wheat. I go into his field and I beat him to it and I plant wheat in his field. So in that case, there we say, the farmer has to pay me the full value of my services. Why? He needed to do it anyway. He may not have hired me to do it, but since the work needed to be done, he would have had to pay someone else, he would have had to hire someone to plant it. I have the right to say, I did the work for you. Pay me in full. That's only when the field is something which is normally planted. However, if we're talking about a field that's normally not planted, you have an apartment building. You come home one day, you're inspecting your property, and you notice someone came and decided to plant apple trees all over the courtyard. You're not a farmer. You're not interested in apple trees. It's not something that you would have necessarily done. It's not something you would have paid for. Therefore, we treat that differently. Now, let's go back to some of the case studies that I'm not sure if everyone received the email, but there were some case studies that were sent out in advance. You have an apartment. You go away for the winter for a couple of weeks, and before you leave, you're nice and cheap, you want to save money, you turn off your heat. You come back, and what happens, Mike?
The pipes burst.
There's a flood. Now, when the pipes burst, walking by the street, happened to have been an unemployed plumber. He sees water just streaming out of the window. So, he's a good Samaritan, climbs inside the window, sees the problem, fixes the pipe. We do a bill. You come back and you say, I never hired you to do the job. Who asked you to come into my house and fix my pipes? He says, I did a service. I provided you with a service. So what's the halacha?
Can we go back to the first one for a second? I'm having a big problem with it. I don't know how in-depth we're going to get here. But with that thinking, I can literally get in my truck and go around and start painting people's houses
great,
when they're
great.
Not home.
Great, Mike, we'll get there.
You don't paint.
That's why I just go around and start cutting lawns. I can get a lawnmower and go to Gary's and cut his lawn. Oops, he's got to pay me now. And I just randomly do that all day long.
Let me ask you a question. What's wrong with that?
People come in, they'll have to stay home to make sure I don't do it anymore.
No, wait. Cut. Slow down. We're talking about a case where we made a distinction between whether the work needed to be done or not. Let's talk about our pipes case. The pipes are burst.
Right.
Someone's going to have to fix it.
Right.
Now, I went ahead. I passed by your house. I see the water coming out. So I went ahead and I fixed it.
Oh, but that's a little different.
Okay. But in this case, it's an emergency. It needs to be done. So I think Mike would agree. You have to pay in full.
But in Mike's case, the grass has to be cut too.
Good. So that's now let's talk about the grass. The grass is 3 feet high already. You lost a couple of kids in there. They have to be cut. That you can argue is like the burst pipes. If it needs to be done, you would have had to hire someone. So Mike is doing you a tremendous service. You don't have to start going through the yellow pages and calling the Better Business Bureau to find out who's good and who isn't good. You don't have to negotiate. You don't have to handle. Mike did it. You come home the next day, it's taken care of. You've done him a service. He would have had to pay the money anyway. In that case, he's entitled to full compensation. Now,
it's never going to work.
What?
It's never going to work.
Which case?
any of them. You can't do that. First of all, they'll arrest you.
Okay.
There's so many issues.
We'll get there. There are a bunch of issues. We'll get there. This is just the beginning, the introduction.
What?
Can I ask a question? Over to someone's car and wash the windshield.
Now listen, let's talk about that case. It's a cold wintry day. You're in a rush. You don't have time to have the whole, you know, defrosting. So you're driving with just like a little peering out of this little strip. If someone comes and clears that off, I think he's got a pretty good argument that this needed to be done.
If Mayor Giuliani had him arrested, though.
Okay. Right. Okay, good. That's true. It's a valid point. On the other hand, if my lawn is, you know, I'll make a confession. I don't cut my grass every week. It can go a couple of weeks. Sorry. If it's something that doesn't need to be done, if it's I do it once a month, and Mike, after hearing this year, comes by every week, I can tell him this is not a sada hasuya lita. It's not work that needed to be done. And therefore, again, we'll get to the details later, I'm only going to pay you this minimal amount. Is there another question before I go?
I'd like to go back to the person with the field. I plant wheat every year in my field.
Mm-hmm.
I spend 2 weeks planting and taking a plow, you know, plowing the furrows and plant 2-3 weeks, whatever it is. And instead, I go away and suddenly I come back and at the time of planting and it's been done for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do my own planting with my own labor. Now, what happens in essence is I've got to give you money for planting my field, which I would not have to have given out, because I don't pay myself. Now, technically, you planted my field, so for the next 3 weeks, I'm unemployed.
Excellent.
In my own business.
You're completely correct. And that is, in the case of a burst pipe, I'm not a plumber. And therefore, and even if I was, in that case, I may be a plumber, but I'm in Florida. So I'm not here to fix it. So that's a case where everyone agreed I have to pay in full. If I'm a plumber and my pipe bursts and I can fix it myself, although it's a repair that needs to be done, since I can do it myself, it would be considered a sada she'ena soyulita. It would be because I don't need an outsider to do it. I don't need to pay someone to do it. I can do it myself, and I would not have to pay for the value of the repair. I would probably have to pay him something, because although I'm a farmer, and although I'm unemployed for the next 3 weeks, there's a certain value to be on, have a 3-week vacation.
In my own house, sitting there and doing, you know,
I think most people, the value over here will be minimal, and it'll depend on the situation. If you are living just at the subsistence level, you can't afford to take a vacation. If you go over to an attorney and say, listen, you get paid X amount of dollars per week, I'll pay you half your salary and go on vacation, he'll probably take you up on it. So, again, it's subjective. It'll depend on your personal circumstance, but there probably will be some adjustment made from the fact that you don't have to sit there in the field schlepping back and forth in the hot sun. You can take it easy. If you're a workaholic, you're right. There won't be an adjustment. So anyway, so let's go back. So in the case of a sada asuya lita, if something needs to be done, the repair needed to be done regardless, then, and I go ahead and I do it, I've done a tremendous service, I saved you the headache, I'm entitled to full pay. So, the next time you're in shul, Mike, you're sitting in shul, there's someone in front of you and they're talking about their renovations they just decided to do, and they're making up all their plans, and they had talking about which contractor to hire, you run out.
The agent.
You run out, you do the repairs, you paint the house, you have the right to send them a bill.
Then he gets the lowest common price. That is an important?
No, it's like this. There's actually an interesting distinction. If I hire someone and we don't discuss a price, there I pay you the lowest normal price. Because it's understood that the employers always want the cheapest labor, if you start working without having a discussion with me, there's an implicit agreement to pay you the lower rate. On the other hand, if it's done without any discussion, we never met, you know, there we treat it differently, there you pay a typical price. So, okay, that's in the case of Asuyolito, where the work needs to be done. Let's move on to the other case. Asada she'en Asuyolito. It's a field that you don't necessarily plant. I go ahead and I do the work. For that matter, someone goes into your house, cuts the grass, decides to... So you come home one day, someone decides to repaint your house. Did it need to be done? Your wife says yes, you say no.
Who decided on the color?
Okay, good. That was the other example that we gave. Damages. Okay, we'll get there. What damages? In the wrong color? Who says that's a damage? Maybe it's nicer.
Mental anguish.
What?
Mental anguish.
Don't go there. Are you an attorney?
All you have to do is live in Marlboro.
Oh, yeah. The next category is if it wasn't an absolute necessity. The pipe is not burst. I go ahead and I move into someone's house and I do an improvement. I don't like the color of their kitchen. I don't like it. I was there for Shabbos. Not my taste. I come in one day, I decide to repaint it. So the other Gemara says, Yodayal, Shaman Lovi Yodayal Tachshayna. So what does that mean? What it means is like this. On one hand, the person did work. He provided benefit. You're enjoying it. You're coming home, instead of your kitchen looking, you know, your kids have colored on all the walls, everything's black, you now have a freshly painted kitchen you're going to enjoy. So he's entitled to something. On the other hand, you never hired him, and you weren't really looking to have your kitchen painted. So it doesn't make sense to say the worker can charge his full value. Otherwise, as Mike pointed out, anyone who's unemployed will just roam the streets, breaking into houses, painting kitchens. So here the halacha is like this. Here the halacha is, shamim moiv yodach tachayna, what we do is, you pay the worker the lesser of either his cost, or the amount of appreciation, the profit that and the benefit that he gave you. So say someone goes ahead and paints your house. It costs $500 for his material, for basic laborers that he hired to do the painting. The value of the house, now that it's freshly painted, it's worth more. The value of the house went up in value, $2,000. So in that case, you pay the lesser of the two, you pay his cost. He did not entitled to any profit because he wasn't hired. In the flip, if the case was reversed, it cost him $2,000 to do the job, but the house only appreciates by $500. Again, you only pay $500. The worker may have invested more, but since, as a homeowner, you've only received $500 worth of benefit, you get the lesser of the two. So, Mike, hopefully there are more lucrative businesses to go into. This is not the way to make it big.
I'm still hung up on the idea of overhearing someone talking about a job and going and doing it.
So let's take a step back.
Mike,
we're not talking.
Go paint this house.
I didn't hear him talking about it.
Go paint the rabbi's house.
Let's take a step back. You know, the person who you're sitting behind in shul needs this work done. They've demonstrated. It's worth $10,000 to get this plan done correctly. They come home the next day, they've got their wish.
But what happens?
What justification? Oh, that's a separate entire. Yes. We're dealing with the relationship between the homeowner and you.
Okay.
If he was hired someone else. Well, you do now. Oh, wait, whoa. There's a separate way. If you try doing this, you're going to get arrested for breaking and entering. I'm not, you know, don't try to tell the judge your rabbi said you can go ahead and do this. We're discussing after the fact. You know, again, let's change the case slightly. I think you might appreciate this case better. Someone hires you to build a house. They give you the plans to negotiate a price. You go ahead.
Hopefully no one else is listening.
What? You go ahead. And you build the house. Now, one of the little things is that, you know, very often people's idea of what's fair in business generally comes from Walmart. You buy something in Walmart, 3 weeks later you decide you don't like it, or if it's not perfect, you bring it back, and they take it back, and you get a full refund. And I was in Walmart a while ago, and the lady in front of me, she wasn't Jewish, Baruch Hashem, she was returning a dead goldfish. The lady behind the counter said, we don't take returns for, you know, pets. And the lady, but it died. You know, it's defective.
Unbelievable.
She sat there arguing long enough, they took it, they just gave up. Here, take your 69 cents. And what? She wasn't Jewish.
Most of the examples that we've been talking about is whether you pay the worker and how much you pay the worker. I'm a worker, and if I don't know you, let's say Mike hires me to do balloon animals at a bar mitzvah.
Okay, hold on. Let me just finish this point, then we'll.
Okay.
So our ideas of what's fair and what, you know, how things ought to be done come from Walmart. Now, when you build a house, if anyone's built their own house or done an addition and used anybody other than Mike, what you've probably learned is that building a house is not quite the same thing as going to Walmart. Things don't come out perfectly, and very often a room might be an inch too big or an inch too small. You might have a corner that's not exactly square. Things happen. It's, you know, there's a certain amount of industry standard, a certain amount of leeway that contractors have and take when they produce things. It's not mass produced in a factory in China. It's manual labor, and again, things don't always come out perfectly. There's a certain leeway we give the contractors, hopefully. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's say you hire your contractor. Again, you didn't use Mike. And he, for some reason, his people, the house did not come out exactly the way it was promised. Whose fault it was, we'll deal with a different time. He didn't deliver what was promised. On the other hand, you needed three more bedrooms, you got three more bedrooms. You needed an extra bathroom, a garage, and whatever, you got that. So we have a situation where you've done work that I needed, but it's not the work that we contracted for. If you think about it, that's the exact same case as when Mike was sitting behind someone in shul. You needed the work, you've made it clear you're willing to pay for the work, but there was no contract. There's no contract either because you just overheard a conversation, or there's no contract because what was built didn't exactly match up with what they negotiated before. Now, Mike, in that case, you do the work, you slave on it for a year, you build real value for the person and value that he wants, but it doesn't look exactly what the contract says. What do you say there? You entitled to get paid or not?
I was actually hired. I didn't hear the job.
You were hired, but not to do it like this. You built it differently. You acted in good faith. Let's not get into.
If the contract wasn't met exactly, I'm not entitled to get paid. I mean,
zero?
How it has to work.
You get zero?
No, you're entitled to material and whatever it costs to possibly, the deduction of what it would cost to make it right.
Again, let's assume for that we're going to deal with that in a moment. Let's assume it is what it is.
Definitely going to be a sliding scale. I mean, you can't just get nothing.
Okay, so that's our discussion tonight. What are you entitled to? And in halacha, it'll depend. If what was built was asu yolita, he needed the three bedrooms, you've materially given him what he wanted, although it may not look the same, but the value is the same, and again, he needed this value, you would be entitled to get paid.
How far away from what was negotiated is the end product? If it's small things that are in a month or two from now,
if it's small things, then you've done the contract. Then you're bound to the contract.
Right.
But wait, now, it's an important point. What the contract price is irrelevant. Let's say the contract price is for $100,000. And the reason why it's $100,000 is that everyone knows it's worth paying top dollar to hire Mike. For some reason, in this case, you don't give him what it says in the contract. So, in that case, we rip up the contract, we shred it. The amount that the agreed upon price is totally irrelevant. But if what you've done is something that needed to be done anyway, and they were prepared to pay for, they'll have to pay the market rate for that repair or for that addition.
When you say the market rate, you're saying the rate that somebody else would charge.
Someone else would charge. Your typical contractor would charge, correct.
You may have to research that. You have no idea.
Correct. And that's, you know, this when people, you know...
definitely less than what I was.
And that's, again, that's what people litigate, these kind of fights. You know, what is the typical market rate? That's what a Beis Din does, a rabbinical court. That's what people litigate in secular courts. That's the fight that you'll have. But as far as what the parameters are, if something that needed to be done, something that he would have done anyway, he has to pay the full value.
What's the case when you have a problem with a contractor, and he's not a Jewish contractor, some guy, and he's going to go right to civil court,
mm-hmm.
and you want to go right to Beis Din? Okay, practice.
My opinion won't help you much. If you're dealing with someone who's a goy, he's going to take you to court, and that's, you're not going to have a choice. You can lecture him that under religious law, really you're right, but it's not going to get you very far.
When you adjudicate in the Beis Din, is there a consideration for civil law?
Yes, it depends. There's a concept of dina de malchus de dina, which means there are many cases, many times where a secular law will have meaning. Halacha recognizes that we live in a country, and that when we do business, we're very often, there's an assumption we're following the norms and the laws of the country. There are limits to it, when it does apply, when it doesn't apply, different lecture, but you know, the short answer is it definitely is taken into account, it won't necessarily prevail. So anyway, going back, so we have our two categories. We have our category of something, a repair that needed to be done, pipes burst, something which the person indicated and shows that he wants the work done, then I'm entitled to the full value of the service, even if I wasn't directly hired. And we have a second category of something that didn't necessarily need to be done, provide value, but it wasn't necessary. And there we say you pay the lesser of either the cost or the benefit that you had. Now what happens in your example of paint colors? You needed to paint your house. Or the different kid. Actually, the other kid. Your house was fine. It didn't necessarily need to be painted. But you had your guests for Shabbos who decided they don't like yellow walls. And they come in one day and they decide to repaint it, change the color.
The guest.
Yeah. don't invite them back. So that's a case where it's ein asu yelita. It didn't need to be changed. And they haven't provided any value. The new color isn't worth more than the old color. So in that case, they'd be entitled to nothing. On the other hand, if your kitchen looked terrible and it desperately needed a paint job, they would be entitled to be paid. Depends on the circumstance. Now, this leads us to two problems. The first is that my kitchen needs a bit of a paint job. And if it's possible that a typical person would say, yeah, it needs to be done, it needs to be done now. On the other hand, the economy is tough, and maybe I don't have the money to do it right now. There are a lot of things that perhaps I should, a lot of repairs that perhaps should be done, but that person doesn't have the money. So halacha is, in that case, even if the grass is 3 feet high, or something, the kitchen looks horrible, if the particular owner can't afford to have the job done today, then we say, it's ein asu yelita. He wouldn't have done it, and again, he pays the lesser of either the expense or the benefit. He doesn't have to pay the full value.
So it has to be very clear that he was about to do it?
Correct. It has to be something that would have been done. The pipe bursting is a good example, because everyone needed to have it done. Your grass 3 feet high is a decent example, because most people would have it cut. If he can establish that he just simply can't afford to do it, then he'd be off the hook. Now, this leads us to a couple of problems. First of all, as Mike pointed out, anyone unemployed will just roam the neighborhood, look around, start painting people's houses, cutting people's grass, and things will get out of hand pretty quickly. Second of all, very often you can provide a value, but people just may not be interested in paying. I can decide right now I'm going to sing for everyone. Now, don't worry. I personally think if I sing, that has value. I have a wonderful voice. Can I start singing and then on the way out have Rabbi Katz start collecting $10 donations because you heard beautiful concert? So this brings us to the next concept. The concept at Tol Etzachav Avenacha. And what that is the Gemara has a case where a person did just what we were discussing, went into a field, planted a bunch of trees, handed the owner a bill. The owner said, listen, I'm not interested in landscaping. I'm not interested in paying you a penny. Take your trees, take your flowers, take your shrubs, get them off my property, fix what you did, goodbye. So the Gemara says, you have every right to do that. Our discussion here is where Mike goes ahead, builds you an addition. You want the addition. You need the space. You're going to benefit from it. You didn't hire him, so we have to figure out how much you're entitled to get paid. But if you don't want it, you like your house small, you like the lower taxes, you like the homey feeling of the things hanging out of the ceiling, wherever. It may be a benefit if you ask other people, but we can't force you to accept this benefit and pay for it. And therefore, the halacha is very clear. If you want to tell them to get rid of it, take your junk, take it off the premises, goodbye, you don't pay a penny. It's only when, hey, it looks nice, but I don't want to pay you. That's when our whole discussion applies. Now, there's a bit of a machlokes of a discussion. About which case can we apply this to? In a case where the benefit wasn't necessary. Again, my kitchen's okay. It may not be beautiful, it's okay. You come and you fix it up. So there I have the right to say, I don't want to pay you, take your benefit, take your improvement, goodbye. What happens with a burst pipe? Can I say, listen, I didn't really need you. What happens again? The grass is 4 feet high. You cut it. Very nice. After it's cut, I tell you, hey, I'm not interested. Put it back. So there are two issues over here. The first issue is a question of, there are some opinions that maintain that by a sada hasuya litha, if it was something that needed to be done, or typically would be done, you don't have the right to say, get rid of it. And the reason for that is we don't believe you. It's very nice you're saying, get rid of it, I don't want it. But if every year you're a farmer, you plant, and now suddenly you're saying, I don't want to play hardball, get rid of your trees, what are you doing? It's a negotiating tactic. You're telling him get rid of it, you know he doesn't want to, so he's going to cut a deal with you, and it's a way to get out of pay. So therefore, many opinions say you can only use this trick when it's something that maybe you do need, maybe you don't. But if it's something which was absolutely necessary, he did it, you've got to pay for it, you can't use these excuses. The second issue is, what happens? A paint job. Again, you hire a painter to paint your house, and he mixes up the colors. Again, you spend 6 months figuring out the perfect shade of white for this room, perfect shade of white for that room, and you come back and they mixed it up. So what do you say? You'd say, forget it! Tolei tzacha, take your paint, goodbye, I don't want to pay you. And how do you take the paint? Once you've painted, there's nothing you can do about it. So here there are many opinions that say that since there's no option, it's impossible to scrape the paint off the walls, the homeowner is stuck paying for, again, the lesser of the costs or the improvement to the house. Now again, in many cases, if you paint the house, there won't be any appreciation. Unless it was in horrible condition before, the fact that you switched colors won't create any benefit. But in the case that it does, according to many opinions, you'll have to pay at least some amount, because again, you've benefited from it, they provided you with a service, you can't keep that and benefit and enjoy that without compensating the person that actually did it. Now, another interesting application of this is, you have a car. One day you park it, the wrong neighborhood in Manhattan. You come back, the car is gone. Okay, file a police report, file an insurance claim. A week later, you get a phone call from the precinct. We found your car. You come down, you see you had the good fortune, the car had been stolen by a drug dealer. And during the week that he used it, he decided to upgrade the audio system, put in a GPS, new hubcaps, nice shiny chrome. Here's your car. Week after that, you get a bill in the mail. The criminal that's now sitting in jail for stealing your car says, I'm a Yairid. I improved your car. Sounds like a good argument, no? So it'll depend. The chrome on the wheels, which you probably can do without, you can say, "Toe, get rid of it. I'd rather have my old hubcaps." The GPS, which you're benefiting from, and you use it wherever you go, you've got a problem with. If he improved it, he's entitled to be paid. Now, he's a crook, he's a thief, he's a drug dealer, he's in jail, which is where he belongs, but the bottom line is, he improved it, he gave you something of value, you've got to pay him for that value.
He stole the GPS from somebody else.
Okay.
Now you got to pay for the labor, too.
It's true, if it wasn't his, but the labor, right, it's true, the labor you'll get either way.
Make it a bill for the original owner.
He's entitled to it. There's a bill, he can come take it out. Again, whatever. So, again, now, another example, and this is actually a true story. This is true with the Rajba. And I think Mike, you might appreciate this one. Someone bought a Sefer Torah. He bought a Sefer Torah. Now, in those days, there was a scribe that would write the Sefer Torah. You'd pay him for it. You would then, before you used it, you'd have to hire someone else to check the Sefer Torah. And the setup was, this second person would check it, you'd pay him, he's the editor, if you will, and he'd also fix up all the mistakes. Because again, your Sefer Torah is, you know, there always are some mistakes. What happened? You hired someone to write the Sefer Torah. He writes the Sefer Torah, and then he decides, you know what, I'm going to be a nice guy. He edits it himself. He looks it over, he has his son look it over, he finds a bunch of mistakes, and he fixes all the mistakes. So the Rajba says, you can send the buyer a bill. We agreed $25,000 for the Sefer Torah. Whenever you buy it, you then have to pay another person, let's say $2,000, to review it and to fix the mistakes. If the scribe, the Sefer himself, goes ahead and edits it himself, and he fixes the mistakes by himself, he can send you a bill. He just saved you the bother of having to hire someone else. So Rajba says that would be the halacha. So for example, you hire a contractor to build a house. Now we mentioned before, there's a certain leeway, if you ever, you know, there's certain industry standards, you know, certain amount of defects that a contractor can leave in the house, and that's, you know, it's really true with everything. There's certain levels that can be off by a certain amount. Let's say you are a nundik, and you harass Mike, and you, every little nail pop and everything, you make him redo it until it's perfect. The halacha is Mike can bill you for all of the extra work you forced him to do. His responsibility was to provide industry standards. He did that. You went ahead and you have your mishugas. Everything has to be perfect. It has to be like this. It has to be like that. He's doing extra work for you. And therefore, he would have the right to charge you for all that extra work.
Even if he says beforehand that I'm a guy who does everything perfect?
No. It's true. Mike is not a good example. When you hire Mike, you know, it'll be perfect. But
I have a hard time doing that to somebody because you're basically.
Oh, it's going to be impossible because their idea of fairness comes from Walmart, and if it's not perfect, I get my money, I bring it back to them, and they give me a new goldfish.
You're prefacing it by telling them I'm going to do stuff wrong, and I'm going to charge you.
Not wrong. Wait a second. Let's redefine this. When a person builds a house, and there's a room that's an inch off, is that wrong?
Yeah.
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 Okay. Let's say the homeowner's warranty, there's a list of different tolerances where things have to be lined up, moldings have to, you know, how off they can be. There's tolerances.
Door gaps, right.
Right.
It still has to be serviceable function.
It has to be serviceable, it has to be functional. But let's say you have someone who industry standard isn't good enough. They want it perfect. And I'm sure you've had such people. Now, when you... What? What is that?
I can attend. Don't stop naming names. I actually expected expected my doors to close.
It's only an inch off.
You know what? I'm going to step out for a few moments so you guys can just work it out.
We have a bit of court judge right here.
So again, if you've provided industry standards, you've met the criteria, you've fulfilled your contract. If the customer says, no, it's got to be perfect, an eighth of an inch off or whatever it is not good enough for me, I have higher standards, they have no right to force you to do that.
Right, but that should have been discussed before.
Good, but you know, when's the last time your customer, before you started, discussed the tolerance levels of the joists being lined? It just doesn't
add. Get a sense of somebody, when you're talking to them initially, how they're going to be.
Okay.
You know where you're going to have to kind of...
Okay, fair enough. But the point is, if you've provided, you've done the industry standard, and again, you have, like I said before, Mike will be different. You hire a contractor, a standard contractor, there are no representations how it's going to be perfect. He says, I'm going to build based on your specifications. You've done industry standards, you've done your part. If the customer is a nudnik and makes you fix things that you don't have, that you know, that beyond the industry standard, he's making you do extra work. You have every right to send them a bill. It's not going to work. He's not going to pay. Because again, we're used to Walmart. But as far as halacha is concerned, once you've provided what you promised to do, the fact that you do extra, you have every right to send a bill. Okay, we're going over time. We have an industry standard for that.
Describe the same thing. They have two numbers, the width of the door, or they have bathroom space in it. And it's a signed contract. Who has the choice to pick whichever term they want?
Again. It's a bit of a loaded question. If there's a contradiction in contracts, you know, typically we assume that the again, it really depends how the contract's written. It really depends. I can't answer that on one foot. There are many different halachas about whether we assume the first one's correct, the last one's correct. If one part is clearer than the other, we'll go with that. There's a separate issue of were there oral discussions and does that override or can we use oral discussions to define a contract? It's a loaded question. There's no yes or no answer.
Questions?
Yeah. Just what time? Okay.
Two minutes.
Okay.
Educator in management. Let's say I'm working on a big format or whatever and I put in a catering fee of support. It covers my cost for all the time involved with person and so forth. And then I'm spending hours and hours and hours and hours. And then finally, they renegotiate for a different amount of people. Do I have the right to add in more time, I mean more money? Time that I spent, like I already had a fixed price per person.
Mm-hmm.
But now I spend even more time with it. But they didn't know that I had that fee in there because that's something I built in because I know that I'm going to be doing that.
Again, if the job description has changed, you get hired to do X, and suddenly it becomes X plus Y, then the price, which until now was X, can also become X plus Y. If the job's the same, there hasn't been any change, they're just saying instead of 12 people, we want 14 people, then I don't really see the room to renegotiate.
More that the amount of time is built in, like they've called me about 35 times versus 5 times, and change this and change that and change this and change that, so that I've spent way more time than I normally would in
the parameters. Okay, that's very different. The case that we're discussing, that we've been discussing until now is, you've decided to cut someone's grass, you've remodeled their house, you've done a service for them, you've provided them with value. Spending time with them is different. Because unless there is an understanding that you're billing for your time, then if you choose to spend extra time, that's your decision. You don't have to answer the phone calls. And how, you know, you can spend less time, but if you do that on your own, and it wasn't with any understanding or an agreement that you're billing for your time, I don't see how that could change. Now again, if they start upgrading it and changing things, you know, again, you can charge whatever you're charging. It's, you know, the deal is now changing. But if it's simply the question you put extra time and there was no understanding and no agreement about billing for the time, it wouldn't necessarily be justified. Right, thank you very much.
quickly, on July 8th, 15th and 22nd, we have three lectures over here, Rabbi Rietti, Rabbi Becher, and Rabbi Chappelle. It's Judaism in an Hour, July 8th, 613.